Simi. But getting back to the Arcady rodeos, I believe Vic remembers some of these old fellas. They begin to having these little Saturday evening get-togethers at a little place called Limestone, just out from Arcadia. And that's where some of the better rodeo performance cowboys begin developing from in and around DeSoto and Hardee County and in that country.
This, talking about where the rodeo started, Kissimmee and Arcady are just like Pecos, Texas, and Peyton, Arizona, that Jim Bob was telling you about. Pecos, Texas claims they had the first rodeo, and Arizona claims they had the first one, but they both claim it started in 1888. So nobody knows. Nobody kept any records of the rodeo records and things back then. And it's the same way with Arcady and Kissimmee. Each one of them claimed to be first. And I was down here to most of them, but I couldn't say, and there's no record of it. So I don't know which place started having rodeos first. But they do have a championship rodeo in Arcady, and they also have one in Kissimmee. And the way that a cowboy rates these rodeos is the ones that puts up the most money. The one that puts up the most money, it's a bigger rodeo. So, but I think Arcady and Kissimmee are about equal on what money they put up.
A lot of the rodeo events are accomplishment events, and others are timed events. And Vic, I think maybe you might ought to tell the people about the timed events and how many seconds that the cowboy has, et cetera.
Well, in the roping, you've got a two minute time limit to catch your calf in time. Which back in the when the rodeos first started and in the 30s and 40s, well, I could tie calves in 14, 15, 16, something like that, and that was good time. But now, if you don't tie one in 8 and 9, you can't win nothing much. And the same way in the bulldogging. Of course, and back then, the cattle cost so much now that when they have to have new cattle for each rodeo, and they have to buy them calves, and the heavier the calves are, the more they cost, so they don't have such a big calves anymore. But back in the 30s, we used to have to rope and tie 300- and 400-pound calves. Well, there ain't no way you can tie them in no 10 or 12. And in the bronc riding and bull riding, well, that's kind of timed. You have to ride one for 10 seconds. And if you disqualify, if you hit one with your hand or pull the saddle horn or something like that, there's lose a stirrup or fail to spur one out of the chute, well, that'll disqualify you. So, these boys now go to school. The kids go to high school rodeos, and they have rodeo schools. And they train them kids. And the same way in college, they have college teams that compete against each college. The colleges compete against one another, but in teams. And when those kids come out of college, when they graduate from college, well, they're as good as the champions. They can go right and compete with the champions when they come out of there. Back when I was rodeoing and in Florida here, they were probably about 600 rodeo hands all over the whole United States. So you'd go to a rodeo, maybe there wouldn't be but 8 or 10 entries in each event. And you'd get a head of stock every day in whatever you were entered in. Now then, there's so many enters that you only get one head during the whole rodeo, if it's one day or 3 days or what. And then on top of that, there'll be so many entered that they'll have the runoff, the slack. They call it the slack. It's so many of them, they can't put them in the rodeo, so they run that off at 10 o'clock in the morning or something like that so that everybody gets their stock. And these contestants are all, like I say, they're all college graduates, and most of them have a good job somewhere. They call in and enter, and they find out when they're up. They get on an airplane and fly down there, do their thing. The next morning, they're back on their job. And when we rodeoed, well, we'd take a camping outfit with us, and we'd just go from one rodeo to another and camp out. Live on the road.
Off of the land. Vic, you might say something about a lot of the contest, the bucking contest, might depend upon the particular animal that you happen to draw for that for your ride.
Yeah, well, everybody, these rodeo producers, a lot of them had what they'd call a bucking string or a rodeo string, and they furnished the rodeo stock for different rodeos, and they'd just go from one to another just like us contestants did. And you drawed for these horses. These horses were numbered or named, and you drawed for them. If you drawed a good horse, well, you had a better chance to win. And then if you drawed one that didn't buck at all, you could ask for a re-ride and get a re-ride.
Along, I think this first time I've been in this outfit right here, but I think one of the questions in here was a pro and con of rodeo. Has there been any major movements against rodeoing in the United States because of cruelty to animals, this type of thing? Anyone want to speak to that?
Well, I can answer some of that. Vic can give you a little bit more on it. But you can be well assured that the Humane Society is checking on all of these animals at all times. And the rodeo livestock contractors cooperate in every way that they want to, and none of this stock is abused. And if you just stop to think about it, some of these bucking horses only buck for 8 seconds, and maybe they'll do that 1 week, or maybe they might do it 32 times out of the year. And they get the best treatment that there is, so they're not working very hard. But they're well taken care of.
There's somebody looking over the shoulder all the time at this.
Got anything to add to that? Nothing except that the Humane Society has went to the U.S. Congress to try to stop rodeoing because it's cruelty to animals. And those, you can bet your life that those rodeo animals, if they're good, the good bucking horses and the good bulls, are cared for better than any show animal they are.
And the value of some of these bucking horses and bucking bulls are just astronomical. They really are. If they're good, we were in California, 2 weeks ago at Hayworth, and every animal that they turned out there was just top-notch, and it was really something to see. What was the Flying U, wasn't it?
Flying U, and every one of them, all them stock was slick and looked like they come out of a show ring.
They certainly did. It was. We're not supposed to tell you anything about Florida, but I'd like to tell you a little bit about the grand entry out there at this Hayworth Rodeo. We were sitting down in the bottom of the mountains, the arena was, and the grand entry came from the top of the mountain down, and I'm telling you that it was really gorgeous. The Indians and all the people in the rodeo and that came winding down this trail and carrying the American flag, and I'm telling you, it gave you a chill. It really did.
I'm not too much explaining anything or for everybody can understand it and whatnot, but if there's any questions that y'all would like to ask, well, feel free to get up and ask them.
Where's the name Rodeo come from?
That is a Mexican name. It's pronounced in Mexican Rodeo. I can't even say that like it ought to be. But they shortened it up to Rodeo when the Americans got a hold of it. But rodeo in Mexican means roundup.
Don't the rodeos prefer a crossbreed animal to, say, a full-blooded Hereford to a...
All right, I'm glad you mentioned that because I thought about that a while ago. I wanted to tell about that. Years ago when they had all those wild horses out through Wyoming and Montana and everything, it was no problem to get bucking horses. And they rode steers. They rode Hereford steers or Angus steers or whatever, you know. And they weren't they were easy to ride. So the bull riding was easy at that time. Well, now then they've got rid of all the wild herds in Wyoming and Montana and around, and they haven't got the wild horses to pick from like they did then. But in the meantime, they've crossbred these cattle, and these crossbred bulls are just like the bucking horses used to be. The bulls are tougher now than the bucking horses were. And back then, the bucking horses were tough and the bulls were easy. So the crossbred steers, the crossbred bulls, they get impossible to ride.
Well, you remember as well as I do when these corn and scrub cattle were about $10 a head.
I bought lots of them for six and eight.
Well, I guess like daddy, like son, you know, I rodeoed all of my younger years. And as time went on and our oldest son become into high school, he made 3 years in high school rodeos. And he also made 3 years on a bull riding rodeo scholarship. So he's had some pretty serious accidents, pretty close calls, but anyhow, there's something about rodeo, and if it ever gets in your blood, it's hard to wash it out.
That's it's known it. As a disease, and I've got it, and I had it, and loved it. Rodeo disease. But it's the people you meet and the things that you do that you enjoy. You should know, lady. That's Jim Bob's wife over here.
She doesn't know anything. That's why she's asking questions. Yeah, I know, honey. Any other questions?
I didn't say anything, Daddy.
Any other questions you people might have? Yes, sir. The contestants?
Well, I don't think they can make that any safer. I mean, that's one of them things. If one of them old horses bucks you off, he just bucks you off. You've got to know how to take a fall.
Yeah, the Humane Society is not too worried about the man. Plus another thing, the wilder he gets, the more points he's going to get.
Well, the clown, where them clowns. They've always had rodeo clowns, but the clowns in the last few years, the last decade or two, are put out since they got these crossbred bulls and these Bremer bulls. They're all fighting bulls right near, and they put those clowns get out there to protect the boys that get off of these bulls.
After their 8-second ride.
Now and on them bucking horses and them bulls, when you see them boys buck off, you notice most all of them hit on their head. That's to keep from spraining an ankle.
Vic, I'd like to comment a little bit on this boy's question over here about the protection of the the contestant. This is what the schools are for. And they have mediocre stock that you get on.
Get closer to your mic. It's on. Just get close to it.
Okay. They have training stock that they'll have bulls that don't buck very much. This teacher will get out there, and he'll be walking along beside you on this bucking bull. Of course, you learn a lot of this before you get on this stock. But it'll be one that doesn't buck very hard. And he'll tell you, they teach you your hand holds, how to turn your spurs out. And then the next one will get a little tougher. If you make a good deal on that, then, you know, and they teach you how to exercise and what muscles with weights to use. And the school is a fantastic thing. And they teach you how to get off. When you wrap this bull rope around your hand, there's a way that you get off. And you don't get off on the inside of the spin or anything. You get off to the outside. And they really train you and teach you. And before they ever let you do anything, that they are well aware that you know how to. And if you want to do it, then you go on and you just like you do it in school. You just, all these little things that they teach you, you use it.
Getting back to the clowns, this son of mine was down in a rodeo in Fort Collins, Colorado. And had it not been for a clown, he might not be performing again today in his activities, because he got hung to the bull and the bull beat him all in the head and stepped on him and injured his spleen to where it was about nearly 2 years before he could have any activity to amount to anything much. But had it not been for the clown helping him get loose from the bull, he might have met some fatality. And we're acquainted with another boy in Fort Collins, Colorado, Wyoming, that if the clown hadn't been there, this bull would have killed this boy, because he jobbed a hole in his head big as a 50-cent piece. And there's no security or no safety concerning rough stock, I'll tell you that right now.
They don't cut the points off the horns?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, yeah. Yes,
they do cut the points.
Yes.
In this modern day,
Yeah, they are. The Cowboys, the National Cowboys, organized in 1935. And they called themselves the Cowboys Turtle Association. And they had formed this organization back at New York. And they were back at New York and they were talking about it, but they finalized it in Boston the next week or so after that. And the reason they called it the Turtle Association, they had a kind of a kangaroo court, like it was just something to kill time with and have a big time out of, and they called it the Turtle Club. And if you done something wrong, well, they'd bring you up before this court and make you hold up your right hand and place your left hand on a whiskey bottle or something that's like the Bible, you know. They were using the whole thing and make them swear to tell the truth, and they'd kind of try them. And then if they were found guilty or something, they'd have to buy a fifth of whiskey or something like that. And they call this the Turtle Club. So anyhow, when they were forming this thing up in Boston, one fellow got up and they had made him buy two or three quarts of whiskey. And he said, whatever you do, said, let's don't call it the Turtle Club. And they said they want to go into this thing slow and make it really work. And so said the turtle wouldn't be bad. So they called it the Cowboys Turtle Association. Now, that's the way it's got its name. Then in later years, before I quit rodeoing, they changed it to the Rodeo Cowboys Association, called it the RCA. And then later on, they've changed it to the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association, which is PRCA.
I've got an RCA little button here that I've had ever since I belonged to the RCA. But the reason struck in New York was that the livestock contractor was taking the entrance fees, and the boys felt that the entrance fees should go as part of the prize money. And that was the starting of where the prize money was give back to the cowboy, and it's been going all right. They have a rodeo. What is Colorado Springs, where the professional, they call it PRCA Rodeo now, Professional Rodeo Association. But they have a museum and everything up there in Colorado Springs.
And every rodeo that they have in Florida, if it's a RCA or PRCA, it's controlled from Colorado Springs.
The stock and everything, the numbers of the stock are turned in up there, and the contestants' names are turned in there. Their numbers of the stock are drawn. Their positions are all drawn, and they come back on a computer and are right here at the rodeos here in Florida. And if there's a couple traveling together, a man and a wife, and she's a barrel racing, she asks if she can be up at such and such a performance, or they call it companions. And they try to arrange it for where the girls can.
That's so they can all go there, so a man and his wife can go there and do, if she's running barrels and he's roping, they can get their stock and come back at the same time without having to stay over. Now, back in 1942, I was second in the bronc riding nationwide. That's the closest I've come to winning the championship. In Largo, Florida, I set a record there that still holds, I guess. I went all five events. They only had five events at that time: bronc riding, bulldogging, calf roping, bull riding, and bareback riding. And I went all five of them.
And it was during the fair, and I think it went for 5 days, but he win the whole smear. It was really...
All-around cowboy. Yes, sir.
Well, I've watched them, but I never got on one of them. Well, they tell me Casey Tibbs, he was a champion bronc rider, and he had one of them. He carried it around, and after he quit rodeoing, and he'd carried it around to different places and put on demonstrations, and he says that he working that thing, that he can buck anybody off of it, that ain't nobody can ride it, and he might be right.
It's used mostly as a training device now. they teach them how to place their heels and everything on this thing, and then they increase the momentum of them. But with that electricity, they can go
One of the bad things about it is that they put these things in some of the clubs out in, well, there's some in Florida, one in Ocala, as a matter of fact, put these things in there, and people get on there, and it's up to whoever's running that thing as to what he can do with it.
Of course.
And one of the things that they have done with it is permanently for a lifetime injured people to where they're paraplegic.
Most of the places, they put a whole bunch of mattresses around it and for the kids to fall on. But you want to use it with caution.
At all these rodeo schools, they have one of them, and that's what they start training them young fellas on. They can run it any speed they want to. They can run it slow or speed it up as fast as they want to.
No, they don't mix too well. I think in the urban cowboy, this craze came up and it spread all over the nation out from Gillies in Pasadena. Dottie and I this past summer were at Billy Bob's in Fort Worth. If you ever have a chance, go to Billy Bob's because they don't have mechanical bulls. They've got a full-size rodeo arena inside the nightclub, and there's 42 different bars under one roof in there. So, and they've got the real rodeo in there, the hands and the cattle and the horses and everything. Any more questions? Now, we've got a workshop coming up in about 6 or 7 minutes on legendary cowboys of Florida. It wants you to stick around, but also now, if you want to see some of these things that these people have been talking to you up here about the rodeo, at 3:30 over here in the rodeo arena, there's going to be calf roping and bull at 2:30 and barrel racing and bull riding and all. Thank you. Oh, you got another say?
Junior
wants to say?
No, I was going to say they're on.
They're on over there now? Okay.
All right.
Where is this at? Right straight across over here, just across the road from the eating joint there. And we'll close this thing down and let y'all get on over to it. You might see something that we might have been telling you about.
And thank you so much.
I really enjoyed it.
Dairy Florida cowman or cowboys. We generally don't talk about those that are still living today. And each time that we've done this, we've always gone back into history and talked about people that have been gone for many years. But one of the best people that I know of to discuss some of these modern legendary cowmen in the state of Florida is over on my right, George Mills. And I think it'd be, we're not doing this category complete and doing it in complete fairness unless we do talk about some of the men that are still living. George, how about you talking about some of these present day cattlemen?
Well, I can only speak for more or less for South Florida in that particular area, but I've been associated with the cow business ever since I was about 14 or 15 years old. And I've worked with numerous different ones of these old-timers, and there's few of them still existing. I worked for several years with an old-timer that ran the Rollison Ranch by the name Uncle John Norman, which is 93 years old now, and he was one of as good as I ever worked in the woods with, and, of course, worked with different fellas throughout across the whole southern end of the state of Florida. And I work in different times. I've worked with fellas that has been at it for years and years. The Rollison Ranch was in the hands of the third generation when I was working there. But anyhow, it had been carried on the same principle all these years that it was when I was there back in the 40s. So, like he was saying, there's not too many of the old timers left. But a lot of the South Florida ranches are still carried on in the old traditional style that the older cattlemen carried them on under.
Vic, you want to add some of the people that you've been associated with in recent years?
Well, in this book in the cowman in the Florida cowman book that Joe put out, He's got one man in there that I happen to know. When I come to Arcady, Florida, back in 1932, he was one of the old cowmen then. And I got to know him pretty well and got to work with him quite a bit. And he was one of these fellows. He had lots of cattle, and he had them strung out on all different ranges. And I don't know, it was different in them days than it was now. He'd want to go in there and work his cattle, and he'd want to get everybody to go in there and help him gather them that had cattle running on that range, because everybody's cattle run together. And he didn't want to pay nobody nothing, see? There was no money changed hands. But still, right at the same time, if you wanted to gather some of yours out of there, all you had to do was say something to him about that you wanted to gather your cattle, and he'd come help you, and he'd stay till you got through. And that was Mr. Ab Wright. And he lived to be over 100 years old. He just died here several years, I don't know, probably 10 years ago. And he was one of the oldest cowmen that I knew of, and he was one of the best neighbors that you could have. That's about all I've got.
Okay. To give you a little bit of an idea about when some of these legendary cowmen and cowboys started making their mark, we have to go back to the time that the first cowmen came into the state of Florida, and most of them came from places in Georgia or North or South Carolina. There was a big influx of settlers came into Florida in the 1830s and 1840s, and they came into this area right in here. This was Columbia County in the 1840s, as it is, well, I guess it's the lines down here at the river, but they came into a little settlement called Alligator, which is now Lake City, Florida, and they spread out with their, thank you, honey, they spread out with their cattle, and I'm sorry that Mr. Johns isn't here because he's a Seminole, belongs to the Seminole tribe. And I was discussing that with him this morning, the fact that these settlers came in and they started pushing the Seminoles farther south. And every time they'd push them a little bit farther south, they'd take up the rangeland that the Seminole herders had for their cattle. They finally made their stand down in the Arcadian and DeSoto County area down in there. And the result was the three different Seminole wars. But some of the first legendary cattlemen to come in right in here around Columbia County was the Barber family and the Mazell family, and Jake Summerlin, who is probably the legendary cattleman of Florida. The Barbers and the Mazells got into a big cattle feud. It ended up after they had moved down in around Hernando County and Orange County, Florida. The first sheriff of Orange County was Dave Mazell, and as I say, he and his family, cousins and all, uncles, they all got into a feud with the Barber family. And before it ended up, it's known in a 3 weeks time that 9 men were killed in this feud. Sheriff Dave Mazell was ambushed and shot and killed on Bull Creek just south of Orlando. Jake Summerlin came in here. He moved on south until finally he ended up down in the Fort Ogden area in Arcadia in DeSoto County. He got a beef contract in 1861 with the Confederate armies to supply beef to the army at $10 a head. He rounded up the cattle down in the Everglades and that area down there, and it took 40 days to drive these cattle up to the